Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Unraveling. My name is Lauren Barber. I'm your host for the show, and I'm so, so grateful that you are sharing this time with us today. Today, I am chatting to the wonderful Amy Illich. I have stumbled across her work recently over on the good old Instagram, which is my love-hate relationship thing. And I felt really, really drawn to talking to Amy, to hearing more about her journey and a lot of what she shares around motherhood and postpartum and nervous system. Everything speaks to my soul. So I'm so excited to dive into this conversation. Before we begin, I just want to introduce you officially to Amy with her beautiful bio. So Amy is also known as Moon Womb. She is a beautiful new brand. I loved seeing that. She works with women prenatally and postpartum with postpartum education and one-to-one and group coaching with postpartum healing practices, matrescence transition, fourth trimester planning, mother circles, and more. She is a mother and a mother's guide, doulaing women through the often challenging transition from maiden into motherhood. In her words, becoming a mother is the biggest challenge you will go through. Your body and mind will be feeling like a different person in the best way, but any worthwhile changes come with some level of discomfort. Amy is here to support you through this transition. She is part of the postpartum renaissance where a mother is cared for and nourished by her village after giving birth. And every single one of those words just makes me feel soothed and yeah, and I can't wait to hear more. So welcome, Amy.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren. It's so nice to be here and meet you, because just like you say, Instagram is one of those weird and wonderful worlds where you actually do meet people and actually do make connections. So yeah, really happy to be here.
Well, I am so honored to share the space with you. And I'm excited because there's just so many different directions that this conversation could go, and who knows what we'll end up talking about. But I'd love to begin by just hearing from you in your words, a little bit about the path that has brought you to doing this work and to who you are in the world today. So please do share your journey.
Yes. Okay. Wow. I always find these things quite hard because they change every time I have any conversation. So I'll just see what flows through. This kind of work has been simmering in the background since I was in my early 20s, I guess. I saw a live birth in Africa when I was there with a friend who was studying to be a midwife, and I was in complete awe of that. I've always wanted to be a mother. And then really the seed set deep when I was pregnant and I started looking into postpartum and postpartum work, but also just postpartum healing and postpartum food and the different cultures and how they treat new mothers, and how mothers are totally revered in this different way to what we are in Western society. And it seems to have been forgotten, like the important work of motherhood, and also just that first 40 days of healing and just like honoring what the mother has gone through, growing a whole baby, an organ, like all these things have been happening in her body. And she's been going on about her day as normal. And then she gives birth, and often this can be a 3-day birth maybe, or 2-day birth. And then she just comes up to this void of like, okay, now what, you know, where's the community? Where's the village? Where's my support? Am I doing this on my own? And it's just the most unnatural thing to be alone with a newborn. And so, yeah, I really, really got into it. I really actually wanted to train to be a postpartum doula when I was pregnant, but it just wasn't the time. And then the motherhood journey, I mean, it hit me in the most beautiful way. And also, I really struggled with the whole transition of matrescence and going into motherhood and grieving the maiden in me. Like I really, really struggled with it. Even though I was, I think I was 33, I still felt that, like, those resentments coming up that I can't do what I used to be able to do, or just grieving that maiden, that different energy in me. And then I just started realizing how important community is. And every time I would be with a friend or meet with a like-minded human with my baby, I felt at ease and I felt relaxed and I felt like my day was just a little bit easier. And those days where I'd be alone and the boredom would sink in, and it just felt so unnatural. So yes, and then when my daughter was 2, we moved to Portugal. So that was a whole new thing, leaving all my best friends behind. We all had babies at the same time, so it was a big commitment leaving them. And leaving my mum, who helped me a lot, and Dave, my partner's mum and dad. And we just started a whole new life here and started a community here. And, you know, now I'm so happy to say that we've got such a strong community, and it's almost, there's a level of almost like, it's a different kind of support because none of us have our families here. But yeah, and then I studied to be a postpartum doula, 2 different educations. 2 years ago, and we can go into that if you want to, but I'm just so passionate about helping mothers in that postpartum and beyond time. So that first 40 days with healing and that transition, and then the first year of like, wow, my life is completely different and this transition is real.
Oh my goodness, there's just so many pieces. I just want to dive into, wow, what a beautiful, beautiful, just to hear your full spectrum, I suppose, experience is just, again, just so soothing, because I think it's one of those things that isn't spoken about enough, about this lack of community. And I felt this from the very first day that, from the first few weeks of having my daughter, and it's not through, you know, like my family not being there, it's not necessarily that. I mean, my parents live in a different country, so there are you know, complications, and there's challenges, and then obviously we've had pandemic as well, so that's created more separation. But I just felt this like grief in my like being that for the village. And I didn't even know, like, it was almost like I was grieving for something I didn't even know what I was grieving for, if that makes sense. Exactly. It just felt like there was just this void of like something is missing here.
Oh my god, I'm getting tingles, and I often get tingles when I do podcasts with people I resonate with, because yeah, that is exactly it. I've not actually worded it like that, but just that void of you don't know what you are grieving. And it's like, we know it in ourselves that we should be surrounded by people when we have a baby. We just know it in ourselves, but we don't cognitively, like, it's not actually there. Now it's becoming more mainstream, the dialogue around the village, which is great. But now the challenge is, how do we make that work in a modern day society, living in these tiny boxes and completely now rewiring ourselves to be open to our community again, because a lot of us are introverted. We want to be alone. Like, I am one of those people. So this is one of my challenges and a lot of my friends' challenges. So yeah, how do we fit in the village? Because we need it. And how do we match that with modern day living? That's my question pretty much every day.
There's so much wrapped up in that, in community, isn't it? Like, there's so much wounding within the community, like within being in community, but yet there's also this longing for it. Yeah. I think recently I was like reading about the difference between like isolation and solitude. And like that really landed for me, because I was like, well, I do crave solitude. Like, I find that really nourishing. Solitude is nourishing. But being lonely and isolated and feeling on my own during like motherhood, like that's like the loneliest feeling I've ever felt, I think. And sometimes I feel that even when I'm in a room of people, and it's just this like deep, it's just such a deep feeling. And it, for ages, I didn't know what it was. I could just feel something in me, like I've got goosebumps now, just kind of, it's a sensation almost more than like a cognitive knowing. But I'm in that same place now of thinking like, how do we fit that into our, to these kind of lifestyles, like to modern living? Like, you know, we can't, for so many of us, there isn't an option to move or to like go and build that in some way. So how do we open ourselves up and allow ourselves? This is a very open question. I'm not expecting you to answer.
No, I have thoughts on it. And first, I just want to acknowledge like the the sort of pain that mothers can feel when they feel that isolation. And it kind of is linked with the grief of the maiden, because it's almost like you become a mother, which you've been probably most likely been dreaming about it for a while. And then it happens, your dream happens, and your baby's there, and nothing can prepare you for the feeling of like how huge your heart grows and how it can tear apart so easily, and how overwhelming it can be to be completely encompassed 24/7 in motherhood and being needed the whole time. And, you know, if I got into an argument with my partner, I couldn't just be like, right, I'm off. You know, it was like I am completely relying on you right now. And that was like a massive thing, you know, and the dynamics between the partner changes, the dynamics between your parent might change, everything changes. And so you're getting to know yourself again, you're building your body back up and all this stuff. And then the isolation is really real, because you're reliant on your community, which is not there mostly. So yeah, I want to just acknowledge that. And then the how is just, yeah, the $1 million question, which I'm thinking like, how can I make this a global thing? Like, it's every day I'm thinking, how can I make it easier for people to meet and create that kind of village? And because ultimately our nervous systems are completely wired for community. And like our first go-to is the social engagement system, which is tend and befriend. If something goes wrong, we seek a human. Like if there's an earthquake or there's a rumble or there's a gunshot or anything like that, we seek a human. We don't seek anything else. We don't freeze. We first seek a human. And that's the same with motherhood, because motherhood can have that shocking effect. And if we don't see the humans around us, then we can drop into those other branches of the nervous system. So how? Wow. Like, I don't even know where to start. Like, for me, it's like I see the bigger picture and then I get overwhelmed, and then I try and bring it down to small actions. So for instance, if you can find a group, first of all, a group that really resonates with you. So for me, it was a forest school, and we would go rain or shine, and we would make a fire, we would have a snack, and our kids would be like grounded in nature. And I would meet other mums that are like-minded, because not everyone wants to be in the rain and the cold in England, like around a fire in the winter. But I met some really lovely mums. So I think like a group is just like such a small little place to start. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I think, so when I first had Sophia, I actually set up a Facebook group for people that just wanted to go for a walk. So like it was called like Mama Walks or something like that. Very, very simple. But I just had this calling to do it. And so it was like every Friday we'd meet at a certain time. Where I was living, there was a park. We could just go and walk. It was like buggy friendly. It was like, it was just a connection. I found it really interesting, because I put a couple of things out on Facebook, and I think there was like 80 people join this group. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa. This is a sign that this is so needed. And not 80 people came on the walk, but people were like, just almost, there was like an instant gravitation towards something like this. And then the pandemic hit and it kind of came to a close. And I have to say, I think I lost my confidence a bit with, like, I really wanted to hold mother circles and offer all of these things because I was craving it myself. Yeah. So I think I'm one of those people that if I'm looking for something, I'll often just make it myself. Yeah. And then the pandemic hit and I lost my confidence with that all. And I think I just withdrew, and I was like, well, it's easier to just be just me on my own. But then now I'm thinking, okay, well, how can we start to bring this back in and start this community role? Because I think that's going to be a big like hangover from what's been going on the last couple of years, is that people are like, we're having to almost learn to socialize again.
Especially with the introverts.
Yeah, exactly. People that are more prone to it's easier for me to be on my own. Yeah. Because I don't have to navigate all of the, you know, social things.
Anxieties and all that. Yeah, exactly.
But I suppose it's almost like creating and looking for those safe places But I love that, you know, like going somewhere that resonates with you. So that for me, it was like, yeah, going out into nature and going for a walk. It was something I was doing anyway. Why not do it with others?
Exactly.
But yeah, like forest school or, you know, even a play group or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on a different level, though, it's like I find the challenge of actually allowing people in is my challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though I want it so much, I still struggle to allow people in. And I feel like you do the work that you need to do yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like little actions, like when someone's ill in your community, to just offer like a care package and go around to the house and drop it off. And when people then reciprocate and say, okay, can I drop you off something? Just say yes, even if you don't need it. And that has really helped me with actually receiving love and receiving help. Because I think from the work that I do with mothers, most mothers think that they can do it on their own, which I'm part of that, and struggle to say, yes, I need help. And even if you don't need help, there's something so loving about receiving a package. You know, I didn't need those things in that package, but actually, it was like, oh, just filled me up with so much love and care. And it told my nervous system that, like, you know, you've got people, like they're holding you, and I've got this community of people around. So I think saying yes to help is another key, like really, really.
Oh, so much. I a couple of months ago, I was feeling like this massive amount of sadness and grief around all of this, and I felt really lonely. I felt like I don't have any, like I was kind of struggling to even see that I have people that I can lean on. And it, for me, often I, like if I'm unwell, for example, I think, oh my god, how am I going to cope? Because I've got to look after my daughter, I've got to work, and like, and I, you know, I have a, my husband's here, like he works in London, but you know, I actually sat down and I cried my eyes out I let myself pour those tears out. But then I wrote a list of every single person, if I needed some help, I wrote down, and I just kept like going and going and going. And I wrote, and it was even people that aren't like my best friends, but I was like, but if I was really in need of help, I could call on them. And actually my whole being went, oh, it's okay, you're not completely on your own. You don't have to carry all this all on your own. If you needed to, you do have support there. And that for me was actually a really pivotal turning point to saying, okay, maybe I'm actually almost making this harder for myself, because I'm not seeing that I do have support, and that I don't have to do every single thing on my own to be seen as like the good mum.
absolutely, seeing is believing. And I think I love that you've just made a list. And I think it just sort of, you were just telling yourself, weren't you, through seeing this list. And I think that's really powerful. And yeah, what a great exercise for mums to do, and just put it on their fridge, so that when they are having these meltdown moments, which can be often in the beginning, you know, in those first 2 years, I feel like those moments are a lot, and it gets easier for sure as the child gets more independent and older and goes to school. But when you're with the kid 100% of the time, and I mean, and you're working as well, and your partner's out the house, yeah, I really feel that. Yeah, and just, I mean, by going to these groups and by making these lists and things like that, you're seeing the community around you, and I think that's really, yeah, that's really, really important to be seeing it, because it can be just this like, it can be quite conceptual, like, oh yeah, I've got all these friends. But if you don't actually see them often, you're not actually filling up your cup.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I've also found that like it doesn't necessarily have to be like really close friends for you to feel that nourishment. Like I went to a play group on Monday and I wasn't going to go, but I was feeling like quite lonely. And I was like, I can either sit here or I can go for a walk on my own with Sophia, or I could actually take the action step, even though part of me is really resisting it, and go to this playgroup. And I sat there, and at first I was like, oh, you know, like no one's going to talk to me and all of this. And then like two mums came over and we were just chatting just very openly, and talking like about, like, I'm not a massive one for small talk, which is I think probably why I don't, like I always feel a bit anxious going into these kind of spaces. But actually we ended up having like a really, really nourishing conversation. And it's not like they have to be my best friends for me to feel like I'm being filled up by conversation. And I definitely felt less less isolated in that moment. And I think we often, as you said earlier, it's like the little tiny action steps, like those little steps, they actually do accumulate and make a big difference. And it totally shifted how I felt that day.
100%. And I think like those deeper connections will happen with time, and you might just have one and that will be enough for some, and for some not. And I think even just going and getting some milk or eggs or whatever around the corner, and just like, and just opening yourself up to all the people that you pass, is an act of showing yourself that people are around you. You know, taking the dog for a walk and interacting with someone, just interaction. And I think I really feel you with the sort of non-small talk and wanting nurturing conversations bit. And that has actually been not so helpful for me sometimes, because I'm like, nah, I can't, like those groups are just going to be talking about drinking in the end of a Friday night or something like that. And I'm just really not up for that. But then I was like, oh, come on, it's a human connection in the end of the day. And you have no idea. You can't judge these mums, because like, you just have no idea what's underneath any of these conversations. And I think when you have a one-on-one conversation with someone, you can be pleasantly surprised.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I think that's, you know, like everyone, really, the majority of people I've met, even if we wouldn't necessarily normally have something in common, like motherhood brings you, there is like a common ground there. And I don't think I've met someone who hasn't. I'm very honest about the ups and downs and the struggles and the challenges and the amazing, like heart-bursting moments as well. But often it feels like there's more challenging moments than the heart-bursting moments. You know, you kind of go through phases, don't you? But, you know, there's most of the time when I open up and I'm like honest about like how I'm feeling or something, then it softens, and that other person, then like you do build that connection. And I guess that's where that, like, being brave enough to be that little bit vulnerable about, okay, I'm not going to just be like, yeah, I'm fine, this is great. Like, yeah. Or actually, like, we had a meltdown just before, I say we, it was probably me and having a meltdown just before we came. And like, and then like kind of, I think sharing like the challenges is almost more bonding than sharing the, Yep, everything's great, like motherhood's amazing kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it's like a little bit like going to therapy. Like, it's just it can be cathartic and it can just be like a release. And I feel like mother circles are just like, when there's a mix, you know, obviously a mother circle with a child is very different to like a woman's circle. But when there's an opportunity to just be witnessed and seen, and just like when you hear someone else like releasing emotions or just really being vulnerable about their like intense argument with their partner, like you just feel so less alone, like immediately, even if it's just that one person. And it gives everyone the permission just to be themselves and to let down this like perfect like life guard that they have. So yeah, I really, really enjoy mother circles in any form that they are, like whether it's a forest school around fire, it doesn't have to be sacred in any way. It's just women gathering together in a space, allowing for releases and celebrating joys and griefs and all that kind of thing. I find that super powerful. And that's where I found my people, because it was other people were also craving that kind of space.
I love that. One of the things you mentioned around like your journey was kind of talking about this maiden to mother transition and also matrescence. And I'd love, like, matrescence, I'm familiar with the term, but I think a lot of people are still unfamiliar with that. So like, to you, can you explain in your words like what that word means to you and what this maiden to mother means? Because there's also a lot of you know, like I love looking at the archetypes, but I think a lot of people often, you know, like to me, I see maiden to mother is not just necessarily about birthing a child. It's also like stepping into this sort of next phase of you. And I think so many people actually probably go through their life and never step into that, even if they have had a child or, you know, so I'd love to get your, there's about three questions in there in one, but.
Yeah, there's so much depth in there. Let's take it in seconds.
Let's go there.
The term matrescence was coined by an anthropologist in the 70s, Dana Raphael coined it. And she started that, just, there was not even a term before that for the transition from mother to maiden to mother. So that in itself, that act in the 70s, was already like a big shift of how mothers could be seen in society. And so what it is she likened it to adolescence. So, you know, the body changing, the hormones, the hair, the skin, your likes and dislikes. You know, you might like different foods and different colors and different style of clothing and music, and you're basically becoming, you're transitioning into a new person of yourself, like a new stage in your life. And it's not, the thing is that it's not, we don't live in this kind of world, in Western society, we don't mark these transitions in any way. So we're kind of left in the unknown. We're going through the transition, but no one's labeled it. No one's told us what it is. And we're just kind of like hanging there, feeling all these things, like our hormones are going all over the place, like balancing back up to like normal levels. You know, our bodies are depleted, we're building back our bodies, like all our nutrient stores and our energy back. And then we're also getting to know ourselves and our baby and the dynamics between everyone in the household. Like, it's a lot. And by naming it and by having this term matrescence as a more of a mainstream word and thing that we go through, it honors the mother and it makes her feel witnessed and seen, like you're doing this amazing work in the world, and you're changing, and I want to be here to help you, and I'm going to bring you food around because you need it, because you're going through so much and so much more. So yeah, it's the easiest way to look at it is like the transition with adolescence, so the hormone changes and the emotions and all that kind of thing, and it happens the same from maiden to mother. So that's the sort of more physical thing that happens. But then what you were talking also about was the archetypical kind of going from maiden to mother and that energy. Who's that amazing woman that talks, Sarah Magdalene?
Yeah. Sarah Durham Wilson.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. She's mega. So yes. Anyone listening to this should check it out. So she's all about the archetypical, like you don't have to be a mother to do her course. Like, she does all these courses from maiden to mother, and actually a lot of the time it's just maidens doing it and getting into their power of that mother energy. And so yeah, there's all the, she sort of goes into a lot of the, I mean, I haven't done her course, I just look at her on Instagram and I just love her content, but the maiden energy is like this young and free-spirited and can get wounded easily by other women and can take things personally and can be victimized and other things. And then stepping into that mother, it's almost like you're maturing within yourself, and you don't have, just like you say, you don't have to have a baby to do that, but just you're maturing into this level of yourself where you're owning your shadow sides and you're owning your full self and you're showing up as your full self. All your imperfections on show and just grounded in a very different energy, and you're mothering yourself, which is, I think, really, really important. And I think when you have a baby, to be able to like play in that energy of mothering yourself and stepping into that mother role is a massive service to your children. Yeah. So yeah, that was a lot again.
No, I love it. I love it. And I've been really tuning into Sarah's work recently, and yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, how old is your daughter now? I can't remember.
She's turning five.
Yeah. Turning five, yeah. So Sophia's nearly 2.5, and I feel like I, until the last couple of months, I was like in the fog, like still in the fog, and I was like, I could see glimmers beyond it, but I was still, I think that's something that, like, that transition, it doesn't happen overnight. So you don't just suddenly have a baby and go maiden to mother. Like, it doesn't happen like that. And to really embrace like matrescence and allow yourself the process through it, allow yourself to grieve parts of you, to allow yourself to let parts of you go, and then to kind of, I suppose, rewrite who you get to be. Like, it's actually really exciting. And yeah. But it's murky and it's really tough to be in that place. And I think it's only now that I can see how much I needed, like what I needed in that time in hindsight.
And what did you need?
Well, I just think like to I think I'm quite lucky that I did a lot of work, a lot of self-work before I had Sophia, and I did a lot of work on emotions and nervous system. So like those elements, like I could see and I could witness, but like I think even having the awareness I do, like I struggled to meet myself with compassion. I struggled to regulate myself. I struggled to not put pressure on myself to show up in a certain way and to achieve certain things. And to, you know, I think it was just almost just needed like a hand on my shoulder or just someone to be like, you're doing amazingly.
And you're doing enough. And you're
doing enough. Yeah. And you don't need to work, you know, you don't need to move at such pace. I think this is probably somewhere we could talk about, you know, the balance of running your own business and having a baby. Mm-hmm. And I did feel pressured to go back to work. And I had some freelance work when I first went back, and Sophia was 3 and a bit months when I started to do a bit. And that was too soon. Like I can see that now, that was too soon. Not so much from a practical point of view, but from an emotional point of view, like I was not there really there. And actually it took another year on top of that for me to completely shed all of my expectations around what my work looked like before. And I had to completely strip everything back. I stripped everything away and I had to start again at the beginning of last year because I got to the point where I was broken. And I can see now in hindsight, like the amount of pressure I was putting on myself to have it all together, to, you know, to be this amazing mom and not feel, you know, like I was not present for my daughter, but also really wanting, because my business is really important to me. My work is so important to me. And not like feeling like I was torn, and yeah, like the resentment and all of these kind of really shadowy stuff, which I was trying to shy away with from for quite a long time. And I just had to sit and face it all. Mm. And to have someone like be there with me through that would have been, I mean, it may not have made a difference, but like it's, you know, maybe I had to go through it that way to see it this way. But I don't know. I feel like that's where, again, coming back to the village and the community, you know, in years, centuries gone by, we would have had that elder who probably would have been that person to put their hand on your shoulder and support you through that. But we don't really have that.
And your community around you to share all the same sort of similar things.
Mm.
Yeah, I really feel you. And I think like, being faced by the shadow stuff is really, I still sometimes can't find words for this topic actually, because it's there's so many layers to it. But I remember feeling like motherhood got so too much almost for me that I felt like work was an easier path.
Mm.
And so I felt like I just needed to get back to doing something, and you know, to feed a different part of my brain. And the boredom was just so it took over me quite a lot. And I feel like that's a lot of people find that that's the sort of biggest challenge. So sometimes it's not even a need. Sometimes it's literally not even a need for the money in that point. It's actually just a need to fill in something that's missing.
I feel that very deeply.
yeah. And like even just watching like my partner would go, you know, from around 9 to 5 every day, and having the resentments of, you know, being able to do a poo on his own and to be able to go meet a friend for a coffee, like in those early days, I'm talking, you know, in the first like year or so, it's, you know, it's all consuming. And when you see your partner sort of doing all the normal things and you're taking on the, it just makes, for me, I really, really wanted to get back into the work world.
Mm.
So it was, yeah, it's complicated.
It's such a complicated subject, isn't it? Because there's like, I feel very much torn often. I feel like I'm like, because I adore immersing myself in my work, in the creativity and in sharing and in having this space to do it. And yet there's, you know, and I also really enjoy my time when I'm with Sophia, but if I'm totally, totally honest, I it's easier when she's in nursery and I'm working. Like it's less triggering. I'm not having to face like so many of my like shadows all the time. Like, and I think that's almost like where I got almost burnt out from having to face myself so much that it was like, I can't deal with this so much. Like, and I need to slow it down. I need some space in between. Like, mm-hmm. I can hold her emotions, especially for me, it was particularly intense from about 18 months until just past she was two. I mean, it's still intense now, but it's different because her communication is completely mm-hmm. different. But that time where I was really seeing her anger, her frustration, her sad, like I was seeing for the first time these raw emotions that were so, so activating to me because it brought up so many things. It's like, or it brought up the thought like, well, I've done something wrong, or I'm not doing something right for her, or I can't handle this anger, or, you know, like just there was so much that it brought up. And I got to the point where I was like, I can't face this day in, day out. I need some space from it.
Yeah. 100%.
And then of course what surfaces then is the guilt and the shame for thinking like, oh, I need to be away from my child.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my God. So there's it's just like a level of acceptance that it's okay that it's too much, that your child is too much, which is painful to think about because, you know, I've been having these moments recently because Juniper's turning five, like in 2 weeks. And it's the first time where I'm feeling, well, I always feel slight emotion, her growing up, but this is intense with five. Like, it feels like her babyhood is really gone. And it's like, there's this clutching onto her energy where I just want to like absorb everything about her. And because I had such, for the first 2 years, I was so consumed and I was fully with her for 3 years with like full time. And she went to, she went to kindergarten at three, but then COVID hit. So then she wasn't really in for a while. So I was with her a lot. And so we had so many of these intense moments that you were just describing of facing yourself and the emotions and, you know, trying to hold space for, you know, a tantruming toddler a lot of the time, whilst also holding your past trauma from childhood, which is super triggering. And now she's growing older and I'm feeling like I really want to hold on to her more because she's pushing me away more. She's more wanting to go to Dave now. She's so independent. She just wants to hang out with her friends, you know, and it's not all about me anymore. And so when that hits, it's like the other end of the spectrum. And because she is at school a lot, we had a sick day yesterday at home and I was just like, I'm actually just going to fully embrace this. And normally a sick day would be like, oh God, you know, and I did have to cancel some things, but I was like, I'm just going to enjoy this, you know, and there was this beauty, this transition, this different energy. And I think it's healthy because we have space between us, which we would have had space between us if we had more community around us. So we've naturally got this space between us. And yeah, I can embrace my time with her more and be more present with her. Mm. But when you're 100% with a toddler, it's a really different story.
Yeah, I mean, I think like even... I find it hard even just to say it because I feel like, oh, I'm, you know, there's that fear of being judged or fear that, you know, anyone could think that I don't love my child because I would, you know, she is everything to me, of course. And I like look at, you know, when I'm apart from her, my heart is like aching for her. And when I'm with her, my heart is like aching for how incredible she is and like watching her. And then there's also times where I'm like, oh my God, I need to get away. And it's just this, and I talk about it quite a lot. I'm like this, just the massive contradictory feelings, which we're not taught how to hold contradictory feelings. We're not taught how to be okay with feeling like this rise of frustration and this like overwhelming like feeling of love that is like, whoa. I mean, I talked about this recently, is this like no one prepared me for how much I'd need to adjust my nervous system to hold the love that I felt for her. Like I've never felt love like it, you know. I've never felt such a risky love. You know, it feels really risky. And to feel that, but then also to feel like, oh my God, I need to get away right now, or I can't handle this right now. Like, it's just so messy. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Two people come to mind that talk about these things. Brené Brown, I remember in one of her, I can't remember which book, talks about how she was looking over the cot of her child and just feeling this immense like love for her child, and then feeling at the same time, please don't take her away from me, you know, that feeling. And that's where you're, you know, that's how I interpreted this risky love thing. Like, it could literally be taken away, this deep, deep love for a child that you would literally do anything for. So yeah, I feel you for that. And then the feeling of being able to hold these contradictory, massive like feelings. Do you know Peter Kelly, Peter Jean Kelly?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, she even wrote a book, but I haven't read it. I think it's called something like, it's basically around this, like, you can be this and that at the same time. Like, you know, you can feel like you want to be an entrepreneur and working all the time, and you want to just be completely immersed in your kids, and that's okay. You know, and yeah, like, I really like the way that you put that. And like, I wonder, how would it be if we could just accept in ourselves that we're going to be having those contradictory feelings pretty much all the time?
Yeah.
And if that's okay, you know, if we could just say, well, that's okay, I think, feel both those feelings.
I think saying it out loud now
it helps.
But also, I think, like, the more realness we see, the more truth we hear. And this is where coming into like circles, or, you know, listening to other people talking or whatever, like conversations like this is why I feel like it's so important to be utterly transparent around these things, because we do ourselves a disservice when we don't actually speak our truth, because it then doesn't give other people permission to speak what's truthful for them. And so you kind of end up then keeping yourself in this perpetual space of hiding and feeling shame and feeling guilt and feeling all of those kind of things that eat away at you. And actually, when they're spoken of, like, it is liberating, and it is, I have a certain selection of friends that I can be completely 100% honest about with, and that's such a gift. I mean, that's kept me going.
yeah, for sure. It's just like that. Like, I just imagine like a cup, like literally pouring out the cup and then filling it back up, and then going on with your motherhood journey and filled up more, you know, because we hold so much, and to be able to be witnessed and release those feelings, sometimes we just literally need to speak them out loud.
Yeah.
And then fill ourselves up with nourishment afterwards, and then go back to our mothering ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is, I, you know, the thing I've noticed is, and I think this is partly social media as well, is like this, the narratives that I see around my motherhood, like there are lots of different storylines, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like I see lots of different narratives, and there's like, you can't, I find I'm having to be really, really discerning with what I consume around parenting and motherhood, because, you know, I read like a gentle parenting book, and then so I'll follow a load of stuff on gentle parenting, but then I'll see like a certain narrative playing out in that space, and I'm like, well, that's not actually serving me right now. Like, that's making me feel worse about myself, or that's, you know, that's not helping me. Or same with kind of, there's a lot of stuff around like the mother load and being completely like overburdened. And I totally see that. And I needed to see that to a point to acknowledge what I was feeling, to be like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one that feels this. But then I think we can get stuck in the story.
Yes. Oh my God, 100%.
Like, oh, well, I keep seeing this. So yeah, I'm really, and then it's like one of those things I feel quite vulnerable saying, but I feel like I can say it to you and the rest of whoever's listening. But like, there's this really fine line of like the martyr victim, which like even saying it out loud makes me feel like, oh, I'm going to get judged. Everyone's going to hate me for saying it. But I've had to see that in myself. I've had to be really brutally honest and say, actually, a lot of what I'm consuming is keeping me in those stories and keeping me feeling like, oh, poor me, like this is so hard. And I'm not taking away the fact that it is hard. Yeah. But when we keep telling ourselves like, oh, well, it's like, this is just, it kind of, I don't know, like the stories then become like those that kind of, like, they're not empowering, they're very for disempowering. Sure.
100%. And how powerful is it that you're seeing this? Like, it's so powerful to have these conversations. And, you know, I'm aware of that victim martyr in me as well. But actually, just by you naming it now has reminded me that actually in this past 2 weeks when we've been in the sick bubble, I've played that role out quite a lot. Mm. And it's so important, just like you said, like, to witness it and go, okay, yeah, I'm allowed to feel that load and I'm allowed to, like, offload, but then I'm also need to just question, like, how do I want to play out my day? How do I want my child to see me in this world? How do I want to be in this world? Because ultimately that's how I'm going to feel. So yeah, I love that you brought that up, and thank you for reminding me, because I really can feel that sort of energy circulating around me recently with this whole sick thing, like, you know, with COVID and having a child and work and all that stuff. And so now the question is, how do we get out of that?
Yeah,
how do we remind ourselves, exactly, how do we shift out of that? I think it's just awareness, like you said, and surrounding ourselves with people with similar dialogues and similar intentions.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
yeah,
and to catch each other out. And I think that's where good friendships come in, where you can actually catch each other out, which I think is rare.
Very rare. Like, I have, there's only a few people I have, like, dared to even talk about this with, because I feel like it's such a delicate subject. And I know I am in a privileged position the way I am parenting. And I still feel that load. I still feel that heaviness and the responsibility, but I do understand, like, from a practical point of view, I have a lot of privilege. But I also have to acknowledge that, you know, I can choose. There are certain things I can't, you know, like, I can't choose if she's going to be unwell, but I can choose, as you say, to, like, embrace that slow down time, take an opportunity to be like, okay, you know what, this is an opportunity for me to receive some support. I had very similar when Sophia was unwell a few weeks ago and she couldn't go to the nursery and I had meetings booked in, and, you know, and I was like, okay, I actually sort of made the decision. My husband was like, do you want me to work from home? And I was like, my one part of me was like, no, I can do this, I've got this. Like, but I knew that if I could do it, and I knew that at the end of that day I would be full of resentment towards him, and it would be my own doing, because he actually offered to help, and I was like, you know what, yes, I would like you to work from home, yes, you know, can we swap, you know, can we tag team it, can we make this work so that I don't end up feeling like I'm the one that's always losing out. And I just had to really reframe it, because I was like, actually what I'm getting to do is I'm getting to spend extra time with Sophia. I'm grateful that I have this job or this work that allows me flexibility. And again, honoring the privilege of all of that, but also to receive, that felt like a really pivotal moment to actually say, instead of choosing the supermum route, I chose, actually, I'm going to receive this help. And I was like, oh, actually, I didn't end up at the end of that week feeling angry and bitter and resentful. I felt actually really topped up and supported and held.
Yeah. And how did your partner feel?
I don't think I've actually asked him. But I think he actually appreciated that. Like, first of all, he got to see and be around, you know, the challenges that an unwell child brings, you know, the phase of the really cuddly phase where she just wanted to snuggle, to the angry phase of, I'm really not feeling well, I don't want to eat, but I'm hungry and I'm aggy. And like, he got to see all that. But also I think, I suspect it softened something in our relationship, because it was like, oh, she's letting me help. She's letting me she does trust me to look after our child, for example.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. Lots of gifts in it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that. I love that. And I think, yeah, sometimes just noticing that we can make that choice, again, with privilege, but, you know, you could have cancelled all your meetings then, and that could have been okay. That could have been your choice at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe your choice of, like, I really just want to slow down and just completely immerse myself in motherhood. And actually, I found, like, the times where I've faced the resistance of fully just stepping into the mother role has given me so much like comfort and ease. Like there was one, I always have like an image and like a word for a year at the beginning of the year. And I think it was like 2 years ago before we moved here, 3 years ago. And the image was, and it's so anti-feminist, but the image was like this really cool, like half naked chick holding a baby on one shoulder, had like a really cool hat on, but cooking at the same time and all these cute plants around. And for me, that was an image of like fully embracing motherhood, because I just really enjoy cooking. I enjoy making potions. I really enjoy being with my child, and I really enjoy making beauty around me and all this kind of thing. And so I was like, okay, embrace this season of your life, because a lot of the time I was just resisting it and trying to, you know, how can I get away from this so I can have a break, you know? And actually that image really empowered me in that season of my life where I was with her a lot, because I was like, I can be that chick that actually really loves all that stuff, you know? Mm. So it's a choice in the end of the day. I know that's a bit of a roundabout way of what you were talking about, but
no, I love that though. Like, and having that anchor of, you know, of an image or a word or whatever it is, like, I think, yeah. And I think, again, we're kind of taught we can either be the career woman, we can have a successful business, or we can be a present mother, or we, you know, like it's always like you can only be one of these things. But actually, like, why can't we be all of these things? Like, to a point, you know, I know like the multitasking thing isn't necessarily celebrated, but actually, can we bring a piece, like all of the pieces of ourselves to mothering, which is, you know, create, whether it's working with your child, you know, sometimes I'll sit here and I'll, you know, check a few emails, I'll do a stupid bit, and Sophia will be sitting on my lap and she'll be playing with the crystals that are on my desk, or, you know, like, can I actually allow myself to bring all pieces of me to like my whole life, really?
and how that changes all the time as well, because it just, you know, especially in the early years, in those first like 7 years, they're just changing so much and their needs are changing. And then if we've got a fairly new business, that the needs of our business are changing constantly. And I don't know about you, but I have hardly any rhythm within my business because I have meetings all over the place, and it's not, you know, it's still a new, both my businesses are very new. So that the unpredictability of all of that is a massive challenge, massive challenge.
Oh yeah. And I think that was a big thing for me. It's like finding some roots of stability. Like, and I think that came down to really understanding what my nervous system needed to feel safe. Because when I first came back to work after having Sophia, my business had, you know, it pretty much disappeared. And I had to build it up again. And actually, the way I was building up at first was not giving me the financial stability that I needed to be able to be creative and to be able to feel safe in all areas. So I had to really look and like look at ways that created some sense of roots and stability, like understanding what my needs were. And everybody has their different like fundamental needs, don't they? But for me, I needed some forms of stability in order to access my creativity, which is what makes me feel fulfilled.
Stability is in with money, or stability with rhythm of your day?
So financially I needed to find like a certain amount, like I almost had like a baseline that then when I was at that, like when I could find something that like supported that baseline, then I could be more present with my mothering. Then I could be, you know, then I could be creative in my work, which then made me feel more like satisfied. And But it took me ages to figure that out. And I think because there is so much instability in mothering and in running your own business, depending on what that business is, it completely shook me. It really shook me.
Yeah. Yeah. And like to feel stable financially is such a gift to your nervous system. Oh my God, I feel you. Like we all, I mean, the whole dialogue around, you know, spirituality and money and like, you know, what people make it seem. I feel like if we mothers were really truly truly deeply resourced financially and all the other ways, but financially, if we were resourced, we would be giving back so much more. Like we would in our work, in our mothering, in our partnering. So I really feel that.
I think it's one of those topics that's, again, it's a bit of a taboo subject, isn't it, the money thing. But actually I think if it's another thing that needs to be talked about more openly. And actually, we do live in a world where we do need money to survive and to feel safe. There's like no questions about it. And again, like, I'm talking from a privileged position, but at the same time, you know, like, it still impacted me not having. And I think also transitioning, and this is part of this, you know, the journey, transitioning from having a stable income and a thriving business to having to being very financially independent, which I had been since I was, you know, I've worked since I was like 14. I've had jobs and I've always like earned money, and I enjoy earning money. You know, I get a lot out of it. I enjoy spending money. I enjoy earning money.
Yeah.
And yet to then go from that to nothing,
yeah,
and having that really impacted me hugely. I think I've not really talked about it much, but it massively impacted me.
And it would. I mean, it's like, it's your security, it's your safety, it's your ability to make decisions on what you put your money towards in the world. I mean, it's such like, it's a currency, it's an exchange, isn't it? And if that's not there anymore, and maybe you're relying on a partner or whatever, a family member or something to be bringing up your child, it can bring up so much stuff.
It's a whole nother conversation.
Other conversation.
Oh my goodness. I feel like we could probably talk about so many different things. Is there anything, what I'd love to know from you, from a kind of, if you want to call it self-care or like supporting yourself, like what are your non-negotiables to enable you to feel like you're thriving as a mother, as a business owner, as a woman, as a, you know, like as a human being on this planet? Like, what are your, how do you support yourself and your nervous system?
Gosh, a year ago, I would say that I would, I'd reel off some things that I do in my morning routine, but lately it's been way more simple. Lately I've been actually really, because we actually had like a morning routine where we would have sometimes even an hour each in the morning, because Juniper would wake up ridiculously early. And I would have this whole extravagant, you know, morning routine of meditations and affirmations and whatever. And now actually I'm finding such peace in the enoughness of just having a really warm shower on my own and maybe taking like 3 really deep breaths. And the thing that's been really helping me is whenever I feel like anxiety might be rising up, or my breath is shortening, or I'm rushing a little bit too much, I try and catch myself and just take 3 deep breaths. So keeping it really simple. Those are really, those 2 things are really important. And then food, just nourishing myself with nourishing food. I really love cooking nutrient dense food that I know is going to nourish my body and my brain. And yeah, and when I was breastfeeding, I breastfed until she was 4 and a bit actually. That was feeding her as well. So yeah, nourishing food. So it's really, really basic things at the moment.
And I guess, I mean, what came to mind when you were saying that is like, because obviously you're in this space now where you've built more community, you've built more of that like foundations around you. So actually maybe those big long practices were almost like you don't almost need them so much now, because you've got so much of your nervous system is supported in all these other ways, in a more organic way, I suppose, more natural, intuitive way. And actually, you know, perhaps partly why some of us need like more elaborate, you know, times is because we don't have any other support for our nervous system. So we need to literally like get as much as we can into those snippets. Yes,
100%. And I think also just her being at school, you know, I feel like I've got more time. But one thing that did come into my mind is whenever I have like a big argument with my partner where I have to shift energy quickly, like whether it's, you know, or Juniper's just like triggered the hell out of me, or something's happened with my energy where I really needed to ground back in, I find like Kundalini yoga so helpful and supportive, because it's breath, it's fast movement, it's shaking, it's releasing. And I feel like I can really get like back into myself. So having these small tools, I feel like I've got so many tools that are, you know, in my backpack that I'll just pick out one in that moment just to get my center back.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and I think that's like building up your toolkit is really powerful. And I guess that's, again, where like that could, to me, that's sort of the preparation that we should be doing before motherhood, really, is like building up that toolkit rather than, and now again in hindsight, I was all about buying the right buggy and all about buying, you know, like getting all the clothes washed and like folded neatly into drawers. And but now I would approach, you know, if we were to have a second child, I would approach it completely differently and be like, okay, I need to ramp up my like nervous system support, I need to plan my postpartum, I need to, you know, like there was just, it would be a completely different experience. Well, I'm not saying, I don't know what the experience would be, but it would be a completely different approach, I think.
Yeah, and imagine all the money that could be spent, like all the gadgets and all the things that people spend, you know, that you think you need on postpartum care, for instance, or massages or a food service, or, you know, all those things that would actually truly, truly nourish you, that you can then nourish your baby. It would just be such a different experience.
Yeah. Are there any resources or anything that you would share, you would like love people to pick up and absorb that could support them in this journey, whether it's postpartum, whether it's matrescence? Is there anything that you feel like, oh my God, if you just like read this book or watched this thing, like it would be a game changer?
Oh, my one of my teachers comes to my mind, and her Instagram account and her work, Rochelle Saligo Garcia from Innate Traditions. She's incredible. And the the words that come up out of her mouth are just I feel so captivated by her and the way she talks about things. So I would definitely go and absorb some of her words on Instagram. They're all free. She doesn't have any books or anything like that. She has a training, but she's incredible.
I watched her Mother Foods.
Oh, did you?
Webinar the other day. Amazing. Oh my God. Just
amazing.
Yeah.
Just yeah, I love her. Yeah, she's amazing. It feels like you're in the same room as her when she talks. It's like, you know, online. I think like a really easy entry into just getting your head into gear for postpartum and how you should maybe feel you should be preparing yourself and your body is the first 40 days. I always forget the author, Heng U, I think, or something. I can't remember exactly. I don't want to butcher it. And then also The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Ann Johnson. So those two books are just really easy entry levels, and they're just really easy to digest, and they inspire and just kind of get your gear into your brain into gear, thinking like, oh, okay, postpartum's a thing, like it's not only about birth and pregnancy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm reading The Fourth Trimester at the moment.
Are you?
2.5 years later.
Yeah.
I bought that book before I had Sophia. I bought it because I loved her podcast and I loved everything about her, and I bought it, and for some reason I just didn't open it. And I find it really interesting, like in high, because I was so fixated on birth. And I think that's really natural, because obviously it's like that's like the next step, isn't it? Like you don't know what's going to happen after that. But it's almost like I couldn't even look at it, even though like my head was there, like, oh, I need to think about postpartum, but I just was like, oh, it'll be fine, kind of thing. And now I'm reading it thinking I'm reading. And even now reading it now, so much of it like is supportive, like even at 2.5 years on. And
100%.
I think, I think now I'm like, why did I not read it?
The preparation for the second one. And also like postpartum is forever. And I know it's called The Fourth Trimester, but a lot of that stuff is just generally after baby, you know, there's a whole section on relationships and things like that. So I think, you just read books whenever you're ready. Right.
And yeah, absolutely. Getting I'm loads out of diving into them all at the moment. It's like, so it's literally, as I said, I'm like come out of a fog and now I'm like, okay, now I need to like absorb everything. And oh, this has been just pure joy. Thank you.
Yes, I've really enjoyed it.
I'd love, just can you share a little bit about where people can find and connect with you, if you've got anything you want to particularly share or talk about, how can people come and connect with your magic?
Yes, well, on Instagram, I'm probably the most active on Instagram. My new handle is now Moon, and then I think it's 2_Womb. Gosh, I should know that. And then my website is moonwomb.com. And yeah, I do one-on-one like postpartum planning support. I do group postpartum planning support, online and in person, and women's circles in person. And I used to do them online. I might do them again online, but for now I'm not. And I also do yoni steaming plans for postpartum, for labor prep, for just in women in general.
I feel like we could have gone down that rabbit hole as well. That's another day.
yeah. So yeah, Instagram and website Moon Womb.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so, so much for your time today. Yes, it's been such a joy to just unravel together. I would really urge anyone who's listening who feels called to get in touch with Amy, to connect with her. Like, she has lots, she shares so much richness on her Instagram, like this posts and stories that just land. So I really encourage you to connect with her. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to let us know, tag us if you share on Instagram, drop us either of us an email, get in touch, just let us know, or share with friends that you think might find it useful. And I'm always, always so grateful for you choosing to listen and to tune in to the conversations that we're having. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And until next time, I will see you very soon.